So usually when you look at a theme park map, it's a pretty straightforward experience, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's completely static.
Exactly. You hold that paper brochure and there's this, comforting sense of boundaries. You are here, the roller coaster's over there, the churro stand is right in the middle.
Right, it's safe.
It is.
Yeah.
And when you leave the parking lot at the end of the day, the magic just stays safely behind the fence.
Right, you go back to reality.
But what happens when that fence completely disappears? Like when the roller coaster, the churro stand, and I mean, the actual narrative of the ride itself follow you home, bleed onto your phone, and just crash straight into your living room.
It creates a reality where the very concept of, watching a movie starts to feel completely obsolete.
Oh, absolutely.
We are looking at the absolute evaporation of boundaries between where entertainment ends and your real life begins.
Which is wild. And we are just thrilled you're joining us for this because today we are tearing into this massive, comprehensive 2026 dossier from the entertainment source Tech and Game.
Yeah, it's quite the document.
It really is. It breaks down the historic Disney D23 Expo. But look, we aren't just going to sit here and list off movie trailers for you.
No, definitely not.
Our mission for you today on this deep dive is to cut through all the PR noise and decode what is essentially a multi-billion dollar cultural blueprint. We are looking at a fundamental architectural shift in how human beings will consume media over the next decade.
Yeah, and to really understand the stakes here, we have to realize that Disney is they're officially exiting this tumultuous post-pandemic restructuring phase.
Which was rough for them.
It was very rough. But the analysts in this dossier, they're actually calling this era their creative
The
renaissance.
Renaissance, wow.
Yeah, and the tension driving this renaissance is just fascinating because they are attempting this crazy high wire balancing act.
Okay, what do you mean by that?
Well, they're engineering this desperate return to deeply nostalgic emotional storytelling, right?
Yep.
But simultaneously, they're deploying a highly aggressive, futuristic technology strategy.
Like transmedia stuff.
Exactly. A strategy designed to literally rewrite the physical rules of how you engage with their brands.
Okay, I definitely want to get into the tech, but I want to start with that emotional storytelling first. Because frankly, the most surprising thing in this report is a Pixar sequel that actually took 10 years to make.
Yeah, that was a huge reveal.
It was. Pixar officially confirmed Coco 2. Okay, let's unpack this. We are heading back to the Tierra de los Muertos, following a grown-up Miguel navigating a new ancestral mystery.
Right, which bridges the living world and the spirit realm.
Right. But hold on, the first film made what, over $800 million?
Yeah.
And won two Oscars.
Yeah, it was a massive hit.
So industry analysts are projecting this sequel to cross the $1.2 billion mark. But I have to push back here.
Okay, go ahead.
In an era where studios greenlight sequels the second a movie makes a profit, 10 years feels like an absolute eternity. So is this a genuine artistic continuation that just needed to be told? Or is this just a deeply calculated algorithmic attempt to hit that projected billion-dollar box office?
See, it's easy to be cynical. It looks algorithmic on paper. In older animation, you just kind of shine a digital flashlight on a character.
Right. Basic lighting.
Right. But here, they're simulating how millions of individual light particles bounce off a dusty street, then hit a vibrant marigold petal, and then reflect that specific orange glow onto a skeleton's face.
Oh, wow. So it's not just a flat light.
No, it's calculating multi-bounce photorealistic volumetric lighting.
So they aren't just like copy-pasting the digital puppets from 2017. They're making a cartoon feel fundamentally physically real.
Exactly. And they're doing it to expand the geography of the spirit realm. We're going into ancient mythological kingdoms now.
That sounds gorgeous.
It is. But the visual tech is just the vehicle for the cultural authenticity. They're bringing back the original songwriting team.
Oh, that's crucial.
And collaborating with acclaimed Latin orchestral composers, they aren't treating the music as an afterthought at all.
So they're taking the folklore seriously.
Very seriously. They are even planning simultaneous releases of original soundtrack vinyl pressings and Latin orchestral albums just to maintain that profound cultural reverence.
See, that level of detail, that specific reverence for Mexican folklore, it proves they know brand recognition isn't enough to get you to buy a ticket in 2027.
No, you need more than just the brand.
You have to deliver an emotional gut punch. So by focusing on a grown-up Miguel's struggle to protect his family's legacy, they're trying to prove they still know how to build a lasting emotional connection.
And building that connection requires patience. Targeting a holiday 2027 release shows they aren't rushing the production schedule.
Right.
Pixar is rebuilding the emotional boundaries of the family and just taking their time to get the cultural nuances right.
Which is honestly a brilliant contrast to what is happening over at Marvel Studios.
Oh, entirely different situation.
Right, because Pixar is nurturing a legacy, but Marvel is facing the monumental task of rebuilding the fractured legacy of its entire cinematic universe.
From the ground up.
Yeah, starting from scratch with some very familiar mutants. Let's talk about the massive $250 million bedrock of Phase 6, which is the X-Men.
The mutant reboot is finally here.
It is.
And they're beginning principal photography in London in summer 2027.
And the cast they brought on stage at D23 is wild. We are not just talking about standard action stars here.
No, it's a very prestige lineup.
Yeah, they cast a BAFTA-winning rising star for Cyclops. A Royal Shakespeare Company lead for Storm.
Which is an incredible choice.
Right. Why bother hiring Shakespearean stage actors for a superhero movie?
Because they aren't treating this like a standard popcorn flick anymore. Kevin Feige explicitly stated they are centering the narrative on the intricate philosophical relationship between Charles Xavier and Magneto.
So less punching, more talking.
Exactly. This isn't just good guys punching bad guys. This is fundamentally the mutant civil rights struggle.
Right, right.
It's a high-stakes political thriller debating peaceful coexistence versus radical sovereignty.
Which has always been the core of the comics.
Exactly. So when you hire Royal Shakespeare Company leads, you are signaling to the audience that the dramatic gravitas, the dialogue, and the social allegories are going to carry the weight of the film.
And they're also bringing back the vibrant, comic-accurate, colorful costumes from the X-Men 97 animated series, which fans will love.
Yeah, the aesthetic is spot on.
But even with all of this, here's where it gets really interesting. There is a glaring omission here. Wolverine is completely absent from this initial core team roster.
Yes, he is.
Considering Hugh Jackman's Wolverine is the single most recognizable mutant on the planet, isn't leaving him out basically alienating fans and leaving $1 billion on the table? Like, is that a dangerous risk?
It seems like a massive risk, almost corporate malpractice, until you look at the mechanics of ensemble storytelling.
Okay, break that down for me.
Wolverine is basically a narrative black hole.
A black hole?
Yeah, he possesses a massive gravitational pull. The moment you put him on screen, the story inevitably warps into a solo vehicle about his trauma.
Oh, that makes sense. It always becomes the Wolverine show.
Right. And Marvel needs to establish team synergy and the foundational philosophical conflict first. By focusing on Cyclops' tactical leadership, they actually rebuild high-stakes dramatic storytelling.
So by benching Wolverine, Cyclops finally gets to be the actual field commander we know from the comics.
Precisely. And the dossier clarifies Wolverine will get a massive phase narrative later. But this initial film is about establishing the bedrock.
That is incredibly patient character building.
It really is.
But Marvel isn't just looking at political allegories, right? They are taking a very dark turn into cybernetic space as well. Moving over to Disney Plus, early 2026 brings us an 8-episode series called Vision Quest.
Yeah, this one is fascinating.
Paul Bettany is back as White Vision, a synthetic being trying to reconstruct his fractured memories. But the absolute jaw-dropper in the expo was hearing the terrifying, metallic voice of James Spader in the teaser.
Right. He is returning as the genocidal AI, Ultron.
Which is huge.
It is. And the mechanism of his return is what makes this so compelling. Ultron isn't just a physical robot punching things this time.
He's not.
No. His malicious code base is essentially haunting Vision's reconstructed mind.
So we are looking at a psychological duel inside a synthetic brain.
Yes. And if we connect this to the bigger picture, this is where Marvel is doing its most culturally relevant work.
Okay, how so?
Well, the Tikken Game editorial board makes a fantastic observation here. We are currently living in an era defined by deep societal anxieties regarding artificial intelligence.
Oh,
right?
Absolutely. Every day it's a new headline.
Exactly. From deep fakes to autonomous sentient code, the fears are very real. Marvel is utilizing high-budget science fiction to perfectly mirror those urgent, real-world technological and AI ethical dilemmas today.
They are staging a philosophical war between a benevolent AI desperately trying to find its humanity and an autonomous, destructive malware that wants to erase it.
It's incredibly timely.
It is. But I find it fascinating that while Marvel is exploring these deep internal cybernetic spaces, Lucasfilm is doing the exact opposite.
Oh, completely.
Yeah, they are looking outward. They are stripping away the internal magic entirely to focus on the visceral, physical reality of outer space.
You are talking about the raw, behind-closed-doors IMAX footage for the new theatrical feature, Star Wars: Starfighter.
Yes. Based on the dossier's breakdown, this is essentially Top Gun in space.
That's the perfect analogy.
Right. No lightsabers, no mystical force narratives, just frontline pilots, adrenaline-fueled aerial dogfights, and practical effect-driven maneuvers shot in native IMAX.
And that pivot comes with a massive casualty, actually.
Oh, what happened?
The dossier confirms that Lucasfilm officially killed the long-rumored project, The Hunt for Ben Solo.
Wait, really? They canceled it.
Yeah, completely killed it. That would have been another Force-centric legacy story relying on magical bloodlines. They sidelined it to focus all their resources into Starfighter.
That is a staggering statement of intent.
Yeah.
I mean, to drop a Skywalker-adjacent plot?
Well, they recognize they need a high-budget visual effects risk to revitalize theatrical interest. They even consulted active military fighter pilots to choreograph physically grounded space combat.
Wow.
Yeah, they want you to feel the G-force in the cockpit, far removed from Jedi mind tricks. It demands really innovative script writing.
Speaking of shifting mediums and trying to capture new theatrical interest, there's another detail in the dossier we have to highlight.
The animation announcement.
Yes. Tetsuya Nomura formally confirmed that a Kingdom Hearts anime series is in development for Disney+.
Which fans have been wanting for years.
Decades, really. It's described as Unreal Engine-assisted 2.5D Japanese animation. Break that down for me. What exactly is 2.5D animation?
Okay, so think of it as painting a 3D model to look entirely like a flat 2D hand-drawn cartoon.
Okay.
So you get the sweeping dynamic camera angles and deep physical environments of a 3D video game engine like Unreal, but the characters maintain the charm and stylistic shading of classic Japanese anime.
It's a brilliant way to bridge the gap between their video game origins and television.
It is. And strategically, it proves Disney isn't too proud to look outside its own walls.
Right. They're partnering up.
Yeah. Launching in 2027, this embraces elite international animation studios to expand their heritage IP. They are aggressively targeting global demographics that might usually ignore traditional Disney animation.
Okay. So let's zoom out for a second. We have massive IMAX screens for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
We have Disney Plus television screens for Kingdom Hearts and Vision Quest. We have traditional cinema screens for Coco 2 and X-Men. We're just surrounded by screens.
It's everywhere you look.
Right. So what does this all mean? What happens when the screen itself disappears entirely?
That is the big question.
When the story bleeds right out of the theater and permanently attaches itself to your life.
And this brings us to the most consequential architectural revelation in the entire 2026 D23 dossier.
The transmedia stuff.
Yes. The transmedia convergence ecosystem. This is where those boundaries we talked about at the beginning officially evaporate.
This part of the report honestly blew my mind. Disney is establishing continuous transmedia crossover pipelines.
It's revolutionary.
The prime example the dossier gives is Star Wars: Smuggler's Gambit, which is rolling out globally in autumn 2026.
Right.
So imagine you go on vacation. You walk into Disneyland in California and get on a physical ride. While on that attraction, you initiate a story quest.
Just a normal theme park thing so far.
Right. Then your vacation ends. You fly back home. But that exact storyline, your specific progress from that physical ride, it follows you.
It doesn't stay at the park.
No.
Yeah.
It seamlessly syncs directly into your Fortnite account. You boot up the game, continue the quest digitally, and earn unified rewards that apply both to your video game avatar and your real-world physical theme park profile.
And this raises an important question about the permanent evaporation of boundaries between interactive gaming, cinematic entertainment, and physical tourism.
It's all becoming one thing.
Exactly. Disney isn't just trying to get your movie ticket money anymore. They are integrating Disney Plus subscriber accounts directly with Epic Games profiles.
Which is a massive partnership.
Huge. They want your streaming time, your video game time, and your physical vacation time to all be part of the exact same ecosystem.
It completely redefines what it means to consume media for you as a listener.
Yeah.
Because it's not just video games, right?
No, it extends way beyond that.
The dossier details a controllerless spatial computing experience launching day and date with the Vision Quest series. It's tailored specifically for the Apple Vision Pro.
Meaning you aren't just watching James Spader's Ultron on a flat screen on your wall.
Right.
Digital objects are anchored to your physical space. Ultron will be hovering over your coffee table while you watch the show.
That is terrifying, honestly. But it extends out into the real world, too, into their physical tourism.
Yeah.
In spring 2027, they are opening fully realized Land of the Dead immersive pavilions in Disneyland Paris and Tokyo DisneySea.
Right, expanding Coco globally.
And late 2026 sees the launch of the Disney Destiny, which is a massive cruise ship with holographic theaters. Once you step into the ecosystem, you literally cannot escape the narrative.
To synthesize what we are seeing here on Transmedia, Disney is transforming from a traditional media empire into a continuous, interconnected global ecosystem.
Yeah, the old way is dead.
Completely. Releasing a movie or opening a roller coaster in isolation is an outdated concept for them now. They are significantly expanding brand engagement across younger demographics that entirely expect their digital avatars, their streaming habits, and their physical reality to interact seamlessly.
It is a phenomenal amount of strategy to process.
It really is.
Let's recap the journey we've just taken you on through this Ticking Game dossier. We started with the culturally authentic billion-dollar heart of Coco 2.
Right, the multi-bounce lighting.
Yeah, discovering how studios are engineering generational hunger. Then we explored the incredibly patient character building of the new MCU X-Men reboot.
Centering on the Xavier Magneto dynamic.
Exactly. We looked at how Vision Quest is mirroring our very real, urgent dilemmas about artificial intelligence.
With that Spader-Bettany cybernetic duel.
We felt the visceral, adrenaline-fueled pivot of Star Wars. Starfighters stripping away the magic for raw, practical reality. And finally, we arrived at the revolutionary theme park to Fortnite pipelines.
And if there is one critical takeaway for you as a listener trying to survive the modern era of information overload, it's the importance of recognizing these patterns. Entertainment conglomerates are shifting away from isolated movies. They want you to live inside inescapable, unified lifestyle ecosystems, understanding that architecture is the only way to understand where our media is heading.
Which leaves us with a final, slightly unsettling thought for you to ponder.
Oh, here you go.
As our Disney Plus viewing profiles, our Fortnite gaming avatars and our physical theme park tickets all become synchronized into one continuous data loop.
Yeah.
At what point do our real-world identities and our digital entertainment profiles become completely indistinguishable from one another?
That is the billion-dollar question.
If the map of the theme park has expanded to include your living room, your phone, and your vacation, then the boundaries haven't just disappeared for the media. They've disappeared for you.
Very true.
Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the Tekken Game D23 dossier. Keep questioning the media you consume, and we will catch you on the next one.